While we were recording the podcast, we got some information that is kind of sad.
Yes, Apple CEO and founder of Apple Computers has passed away. Steve Jobs has died on October 5th, 2011, at age 56.
His health has not been good, as everyone knows, and there was some speculation about why he didn't attend the event yesterday. You have the keynote. I mean, even though he's not no longer the CEO, people thought he should be there, but he died today. So that has to have been the reason.
Yeah. So the guy who invented the iPhone had the vision for the iPhone, the iPad, the iPod that changed everything over the last 10 years, unfortunately, has lost to his battle with cancer.
Yeah, he also introduced the Think Different concept.
Yes.
As
And
Tom Merritt points out, an annoyance to grammar nerds everywhere, like me. So I had to mention it.
yeah. And now there is tremendous coverage all over the place. If you're looking for a good retrospective on him, you can head over to boingboing.com because apparently they had one already scripted and really nailed the obituary for him. I do see here on Twitter that Bill Gates says, "Melinda and I extend our sincere condolences to Steve Jobs' family and friends. The world rarely sees someone who made such a profound impact." He also says, "For those of us lucky enough to get to work with Steve, it's been an insanely great honor. I will miss Steve immensely." And he's got a post to his blog where he's got a little bit more of a write-up. Ah, so anyway, we will return you to your regularly
Regularly
scheduled
scheduled
program.
podcast.
The following takes place between 6 p.m. and 7 p.m.
Hello, and welcome to Tech Access Weekly, a podcast of unspecified length concerning news and events in accessible technology. To get involved, email techaccessweekly@gmail.com. Follow TA_weekly on Twitter or call 260-2-ASK-TAW. This is Tech Access Weekly, episode 111 for October 5th, 2011. I am Rodney.
This is Aaron.
And this is All Fired Up.
Woohoo!
As we are, as you can tell, playing with our new crappy theme. No, all
It's
improved
not a crappy,
theme.
It's an all improved theme.
Yes, the wonderful theme that you have heard is by the infamous Dan Luters of Why Me Studios.
Yes,
and
who has done various themes and jingles for the Twit Network as well as Buzz Out Loud on CNET.
And other podcasts that you
yes.
may know out there.
Yes.
This is our sort of collaboration, figuring out what in the heck to create with Dan. And
yeah.
came up with something pretty good there.
Yeah, he did.
A little flexibility so we can do things. And even though we practice this stuff to figure out how we're going to announce it, it changes even though you're doing it live.
Yep, it does indeed.
So I probably confused the heck out of her when I switched it up.
Nah.
Nah, she knew I'd screw it up.
Well, I mean, you just kind of have to roll with it,
whatever
happens, you know. And next week, I'll be the one announcing, so we're making this a little more egalitarian.
Yes, so that you can get used to both of our voices,
yes.
and you may probably end up voting on who you would rather hear.
Let's not
no,
go there.
We won't go there.
So, we are all fired up about lots of different things today. But maybe we should start with some listener mail. So first of all, I would like to thank Brian Watson for all of his cool things that he has submitted to us, the blog posts. Definitely appreciate that. Chris Brunenberg had a suggestion about how to use hotkeys on, you know, websites like Gmail and things that have their own hotkeys. Screen reader quick navigation keys will interfere with that, but if you do the pass-through keystroke for your screen reader, you will then be able to, the next press will be one of the website's hotkeys. I haven't actually tried that yet, but that is a very good idea that I just haven't considered because I forget that that keystroke is even there.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So thanks, Chris, for that, and I'll definitely try it out and see how it works.
Yeah, I've been having kind of that same little bit of an issue with ZoomText because it has hotkeys and things. And I keep thinking that my Windows key is sticking. And if I close ZoomText, it stops. If I open ZoomText, it's causing problems. I also use
one thing
we've been having issues with as of just a few minutes ago on Twitter.
Yes.
I use TweetDeck, which, yes, is inaccessible, but I have vision.
He's special.
I have vision.
He's special.
I'm a very special boy. I couldn't resist that one. But it has hotkeys inside of the Adobe Air application, and it seems like it might be what's actually been causing my problem of heartache over the last couple of months, because now I've got it turned off, and I haven't had the problem for 2 hours.
Even with ZoomText on?
Even with ZoomText on, I'm not having an issue.
Shh.
Yes.
Maybe I shouldn't say that too much.
Exactly.
But, okay.
You killed the hotkey!
No. It's my fault, like always.
Yeah, pretty much. But yeah, we've been having a little disturbance on Twitter just before recording this because everyone was like, TweetDeck's inaccessible. No wonder it's having problems. So.
Yeah. Well, I don't understand why it's so hard for people to like get their heads around the fact that I married someone that has vision. I don't understand that.
I don't know. It's either that you're too gorgeous to afford someone, or too homely to actually get somebody that can see you, or maybe I'm just that bad off.
That might be desperate. Yeah, but what I think it is, though, dear, in all seriousness, is that people, you know, we're doing a podcast that focuses on technology, and people don't understand that there is this whole population of legally blind folks. Larger than the population of totally blind folks by far, I might add. And y'all just get, like, thrown through the cracks sometimes, and people just aren't aware of it.
We are the redheaded stepchild of the visually impaired community.
Yeah, pretty much.
So, yeah. I mean, it's a common thing. We mentioned that even during our Meet the Host episode, number 74, that you can find on our website under the About Us page, which I actually sent to a couple of people saying, hey, guess what?
Yes, our Christmas, our day after Christmas special. That was actually really fun.
Yeah, we may have to do something like that again this year.
I don't know
what it will be.
That was so fun to do. Oh, my goodness. We may have to do that again.
Yeah, we laughed about that one for a while.
I occasionally listen to it just for the fun of it a couple times afterwards.
Oh, dear.
To the beginning of it.
Ah.
You know, the introductions and stuff.
Yeah.
Because it was funny.
Yeah. But we won't tell you why.
No,
in case you are a new
why.
Listener or just, you started listening after that, you can head over to techaccessweekly.com and go to the About Us page. And there is a link there for episode 74, Meet the Host.
And why did we wait until 74 to do this, you ask? I don't know.
Because we were really sucky beforehand.
Well, yeah, pretty much, and very lazy and stuff.
But it was kind of funny because some people that actually do mainstream podcasts listened to that one and went, wow.
Well, I think what inspired us to do it was the Ouch blog, and they said, this is a great podcast. Really don't know who these people are, but their podcast is good, or something like that. We're like, you know.
Yeah, that's what it was. It was the top five accessibility podcast. It was like Sarah Talk, who you assumes there, the
right.
Freedom Scientific stuff, and other people, and then us.
And they're like, we don't know who these people are. And it was just kind of like, you know, we really haven't talked about ourselves. So.
Well, we did early.
But
at that point,
we were
listener
sucky
counts
at that point.
Were down.
Yeah.
You know,
quite.
Where it was sort of
okay.
Build your audience.
Anyway. Enough of our self-aggrandizement and ego trips. Let us move on to the actual stories.
So, let us know what you think of the theme.
Absolutely. And David Partrick also sent an email talking about, you know, whether that he was going to sue us because we were making changes, even though he didn't know what those changes were. And he's asking us if we know of any lawyers.
Yeah. Since he gave us that attitude, I unfriended him on Facebook. I couldn't resist.
I don't have it. I gotta find it.
If you haven't heard, that is his song is on iTunes songs. That you can find.
Yes.
I unfriended you on Facebook.
And it is an awesome song, by the way.
Yeah.
I think it's great. Anyway.
Actually, you can find it on YouTube as well.
Don't tell people that. Then he won't get paid for it.
But it's not as good a quality.
That's true.
On the iTunes. It's kind of staticky, but
yeah.
On the actual iTunes, you get a decent version for, I believe it's 99 cents.
Something like that.
Where better songs are sold.
Yes, on iTunes. And we have more on the Apple Music battle later on. We should probably start to focus on actual stories now.
Oh, okay. Cool. Oh! That's probably a good sign. So, in security news, Microsoft Security Essentials this past weekend flagged the Google Chrome browser as being part of the Zeus malware network.
Whoopsie!
Yeah, so was that a mistake or was it not? Nobody really knows.
And, you know, it was one of those things where a lot of people just, they restarted their computers and it said, Windows Security Essentials detected a problem. You click the little thingy to get rid of the problem. Screen and you don't know what it was, and then you went to look for Chrome and it's like mysteriously gone.
Yeah, that was the biggest problem, was that it did not just disable Chrome, it removed it.
Because that's what happened to me.
Just completely wiped out Chrome.
That happened to me, and I never really thought much about it. And then the other day I went to go look in it and it wasn't there anymore. And I thought, did I uninstall this?
Yeah.
But Security Essentials must have done it.
So if you have had this problem and you were getting a false positive with that, you can make sure to run your Microsoft Security Essentials update. And they have pushed out a fix for that. It should have automatically updated if you have not changed those settings.
Moving right along.
Browsers are going to actually tackle the beast HTTPS hole that we had talked about last week, which is part of the TLS 1.0 standard. They are actually trying to stop the security hole with HTTPS web sites and such.
Yeah, it's interesting because do they actually call it the beast? Or does it have a name?
It's something like that, but they call it the beast for abbreviation purposes.
Well, anyway, browser developers have been trying to come up with solutions for this. Most of them really downplay this as not being much of a problem.
Well, the biggest thing is the person actually has to be on the same wireless network that you are.
Right.
So they have to really be in close proximity to you. So that's kind of the security thing there. Opera sent out a fix immediately for this. Actually, they were the ones that sort of figured it out. Yeah, but it broke some websites and other things. Firefox has not made any changes yet. They haven't seen anything, but they are considering disabling Java. They also say that if you want to, you can run a extension called NoScript that will disable JavaScript and the such, and that should assist in the problem. Internet Explorer folks are actually working on a fix, but they're not really in too big of a hurry because they don't see it as being a major flaw at this point.
Wouldn't disabling Java be kind of a drastic step?
I would think so, because a lot of websites use Java. You might have plugins and things that access the runtime environment. I don't know. Doesn't seem like a bunch of urgency to it. Just want to be careful in terms of what you are actually doing if you're at a coffee shop or somewhere.
In Android news,
AT&T's newly released Samsung Galaxy S2 has a little bit of a security issue. You might remember the Apple iPhone, I believe it was the fourth edition, actually had an issue similar with the lock screen. The Galaxy S2 has a problem where if the screen is locked, someone can walk up, hit the button to wake the screen up. Shows them a lock code. They wait for it to go away. The screen goes dark. Press the button again and it comes up and there's no lock screen. Whoops.
Oopsie.
So you can actually bypass the lock code that you have programmed in on the Galaxy S2. You might remember the iPhone had the little issue where you could still access the contacts and such in one of the early iOS versions. And another little thing for HTC phones, there is a flaw that HTC is urgently working on, where users can actually get to a log in their phone that has all of your contact information, who you connected with, where you've been, all that such and so. You can delete the file if you root your phone, but that's a drastic measure, and depends on how security crazed you are.
Root your phone?
Yeah, you can sort of like get root access where you actually get into the inner workings.
Okay.
You know, you get to the baseline of the C drive, so to speak.
Yes. Facebook is being sued.
Yes. In a story
surprise,
we mentioned last
surprise.
Week.
There are a couple of different people starting to sue Facebook over its admission that it tracks people after they log out of Facebook.
Yeah, this was the tracking cookie issue that they promptly denied, and then they actually
admitted
and said that you should just trust us, and then they actually fixed the, I believe it was 7 different tracking cookies that they put on your computer.
Well, now some people, one person in particular in Illinois, has sued Facebook over this, trying to make it into a class action lawsuit. Damage amount unspecified at this point, saying that Facebook's tracking cookies violate people's right to privacy, and that they're, you know, they're being, you know, what is that word? Fraud. Yes. Somehow they're trying to say that Facebook is committing fraud.
Oh.
I don't know.
It's kind of interesting because people get in an uproar over Facebook, but then you hear Android users and this HTC log issue where it's like tracking all of your information, your GPS things, and nobody really cares. I listened to a couple different Android shows, not that I have an Android phone because we have iPhone 4s until next year. But they were just kind of like, well, you know, I'm kind of glad that information is there and that we have access to it and everything. But when it was the iPhone, it was like, how could they?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Other Facebook news. Facebook is doing something good, though. It is trying to
scan links
for malware.
Yeah. They're going to use WebSense's Threat Seeker Cloud system in order to automatically scan any sites that you are posting or clicking for potential malware and viruses.
So, along with that, it seems like they're trying to, get concerned about the consumer. They're having kind of a rough week. And in an effort to assure us that they are concerned about our privacy, they have posted some information on how to deal with this new timeline that they're rolling out.
Yeah, the timeline basically tracks your life on the web all the way from the beginning of time. They actually want you to go back and put your baby pictures and different milestones in your life. Well, PC Magazine came up with a few tips that you can find a link in our show notes over at Delicious, or possibly in this post if I remember to put it in there. But things like how to make all posts in your timeline only visible to friends only, how to limit the number of posts others
see.
Do mm-hmm. or actually show up in your timeline. Like if your sister or somebody was to post, her post might show up in your timeline. You know, she may give information that you don't want out there, so you can actually limit what they see.
And how to manually edit your posts.
That may be
a little drastic and extreme, but hey, some people might not have anything better to do.
Yeah.
But they show you your posts by year and by month, and you can just go down and edit them all.
So as someone pointed out on another podcast earlier today, I think it was this week in Google, Gina Trapani said, if you're really a scrapbooker type person and you want to do it in the digital age, timeline is perfect for you.
Yay, timeline.
Twitter has a few security tips that you can use. They are ranging from the wonderful things as, of course, use a strong, unique password. Use strange letters. Don't use words that are in the English dictionary. Alternate upper and lower case, that kind of thing.
And one thing I will say that people might not be aware of, especially if you use a screen reader, if you enter a password, if you're trying to change your password or you're just signing up and you're entering a password into Twitter, it will tell you, I think it's underneath where you enter it, the field underneath it. It will say strong, very strong, you know, not strong underneath there.
Yeah.
So not many people know that probably, but it does do that.
And on websites, if you can enter 16 digits, that's usually a good strong password, you know, with upper lowercase, strange characters, that kind of thing. The other tip was that you need to know where you are actually logging in. Make sure to always check the location bar. Make sure you're there. If you are a little bit skeptical, make sure that you go to twitter.com in order to log in. And under your preferences, make sure that you have it checked so that Twitter is always using the HTTPS option, even though it may be flawed because of the prior tweak.
Well, yeah, but that person has to be in the house with you almost.
Yeah, but they've kind of worked around that.
Yeah,
so well, you should be safe on the Twitter.
Should.
Hotmail is actually going to try and help people with their cleanup of their inboxes.
Among other things, Microsoft apparently had a big event where it gave a big Hotmail presentation about how Hotmail was going to get all new, shiny, improved, and better.
It's going to get hot.
Exactly. And one of the things that they have put in place is a scheduled cleanup for your inbox.
Yeah,
so you can tell your inbox to purge itself.
Yeah, and you can also set up, like if you get newsletters and things, you can actually set up categories for what it's supposed to clean up and not. So if you went out and you accidentally subscribed to something way back when and you don't want to get it anymore, you can say trash it. You know, it's kind of automatic way to do filters.
Right.
They also have more options like being able to do little flags. Labels and flags and things. And there's about five or six different things, which you can find in the show notes if you would like to peruse that or pass that information along to anyone that uses Hotmail, which I don't really know who would. But apparently 350 million people still use Hotmail.
Whoa.
As opposed to 310 million that use Yahoo and 260 for Gmail.
Only 260 use Gmail?
260 million.
Wow.
Yeah.
Maybe it would have been more than that.
Yeah. I mean, I like Gmail. I mean, granted, it is not tremendously screen reader friendly, you know, but if you get all of your IMAP settings and things set up, you can use it in live mail or something. So.
Oh, you mean Windows crap mail?
Yeah, crap mail. Mm-hmm. But their spam filtering is top notch.
Oh, yeah. Rarely, their spam filtering is great.
I rarely ever get anything in my inbox that I
except if it
spam.
Goes a little overkill and decides that it wants messages that you know are not spam to be spam.
True. But
that it happens occasionally. And I actually have gotten a couple messages come through that are spam, but very, very rarely.
And now the saga that caused us to name this
All Fired Up. The Kindle Fire, as we all know, we talked about it last week, was released
by Amazon. This is their $199 Wi-Fi enabled Android tablet that is very similar to the Playbook by BlackBerry.
It is not accessible at all for people who have visual impairment. So this is very upsetting for people, to say the least. We should explain that the Kindle 3, which is the keyboard Kindle, I guess now they're trying to rebrand it, is still accessible.
And
still sold.
Well, it's sort of accessible.
Sort of accessible.
It really doesn't have like accessible menus and things like that, I don't guess. But it does actually do the read aloud, and they are still selling one of the models for $99, as opposed to the $79 Kindle that is out, which someone pointed out, does not actually have
a speaker. So even if they wanted to try and make it accessible, they really couldn't because it doesn't have a speaker to it. But it is very disappointing that the Kindle Fire does not have any accessibility built into it whatsoever, especially since, you know, the whole lawsuit deal with Arizona State University and Amazon, and, you know, Amazon said, okay, we'll make the Kindle 3 accessible, sort of, kind of, we'll do enough to get by. And they didn't, you know, learn from their mistake there and build the same features, if not better ones, into the Kindle Fire.
Yeah, and everybody's getting in a big uproar. Some are starting to yell legal action, you know, but that's kind of not always the best route to go. Especially when people nowadays, they sue over everything.
I mean, I know. I mean, who's going to care if you take legal action at this point? I mean, lawsuits just proliferate like crazy, and oh, it's these blind people again. They're suing us again. Oh my gosh, this is driving us crazy. And it gives, you know, it gives, kind of tarnishes our reputation.
Well, yeah. Really. Well, and a lot of times people that actually gripe about things are not really articulate about what they say, other than, gee, that Amazon Kindle Fire doesn't have accessibility. That sucks.
It's bad. Other ways in which you can get involved and do things are perhaps, oh, go into the Amazon forums and complain.
Yeah, I did this earlier.
I went into
the Kindle forums and into the customer service forums, and I did a search on the word accessibility. There was very few posts. I mean, it was like less than 50 that came up. I don't know whether that's because they've purged recently or what. But yeah, there was like 39 or 40 posts related to accessibility, and everything was whether or not the Kindle for PC was accessible and how they could use it with, say, NVDA or JAWS or something. And that doesn't really show Amazon that you're wanting to use the product. I mean, it's an Amazon website. They actually have their forums. You can post things out there, and there's nothing. No questions about accessibility as far as the Kindle or anything. It was just, like, bleak.
Now, there is the website KindleFireSale.org. Yes.
Which was started by Justin Romack on Twitter. Justin, R-O-M-A-C-K. It's a website that... It's just pretty much a blog post at this point, and they are proposing the potential idea of, okay, everybody order a Kindle.
Kindle Fire.
Yeah, Kindle Fire, and then cancel the order so that when it comes up and says, why are you canceling your order, you can say because of lack of accessibility. I don't know whether that would really be anything other than like a fly on the shoulder of the Green Giant.
Yeah.
Because they've already got 260,000 pre-orders for the Kindle Fire, and if you have maybe 1,000 people that cancel, I mean, it's just going to get lost in the noise.
Probably. Although, I mean, I think it's sort of a good idea, but I think you're right that it will kind of get lost because there are so many people that are going to order them and be happy about it, and then this few little number that are going to order them and, you know, have this accessibility statement in their cancellation. Also, wouldn't you have to pay for shipping?
Well, I guess if you actually paid for, I guess if you ordered it and then you cancel it before it ships, you're in the clear. But I guess if you went and pre-ordered it right now, you would be pretty safe. But if you waited until mid-November when it's actually supposed to ship out to people, if you did this, you would risk it actually coming out to you. And most of the time with Amazon, if you actually purchase something and do the free super saver shipping, they'll actually charge you that from your refund that you get. So if it was a $200 item and it was a $10 shipping, they would only refund you $190 out of that.
Yeah. One other thing you can do is contact your tech podcast of choice and let, you know, a lot of those podcasts take comments and suggestions and comments about tech stories from around the web and let them know, you know, we're really upset about the fact that the Kindle Fire is not accessible. These are the things we need. These are the things that we've, you know, people have proposed solutions to Amazon for years and they haven't done much about it. And just to inform them that there's a lack of accessibility so that they can make the mainstream audience more aware of that.
Yeah, and I mean, the Kindle Fire Sale thing, I think it might be in a step in the good direction, but when I first went to the website, I didn't care for it too much because it isn't written that well to me anyway. There's like, what I first noticed when I went to it was just there was one line out there that started with the word and. It was a lowercase and. It wasn't, didn't seem like it was proofed for it. You know, it's, and books, magazines, and newspapers are only a portion of the media formats this distribution giant
is. Don't ever begin a sentence with an and.
Poised to
ever.
Control. So, yeah, and a double and at that.
Yeah, you don't ever begin a sentence with an and.
You know, and I pointed that out to Justin, and he said, well, he was going for more of an artistic, impactful statement being a, I'll point it out again, sighted person, it looks like you don't know what you're doing.
Well, also, if I read that, I mean, me personally, you know, with a screen reader, you can tell when a period, you know what I'm saying? And then there's an and. Uh-uh, you don't do that. I mean, my English grammar courses were not that extensive, but that is something I learned. Don't begin a sentence with and don't begin a sentence with but. B-U-T, but.
Yeah. I mean, if I notice that things don't look grammatical.
I mean, there are the words also and however that are perfectly legitimate sentence beginners.
But apparently it was proofed and people really liked it and everything, but I don't know whether that was people that use screen readers or sighted people or what. You know, I just think if it was to actually get out and mainstream media would pick it up, it would just kind of be,
I'm not really talking about the Kindle Fire sale. I'm talking about the Kindle. It's Kindle Fire itself.
Yeah.
You know, telling your mainstream media provider of choice.
Yeah.
This is not accessible. Please kind of like, you know, do you want to do a story about it or talk to us about it further type of thing? And I will point out that Andy Anatko of Twit Network fame, was that him that pointed out that... he was disappointed that the Kindle Fire did not have accessibility features in it?
Yeah, at the end of the announcement or MacBreak Weekly or something he was on last week.
Yeah.
But I kind of find it interesting that why is it that everyone gets in an uproar over the Kindle Fire when there's a lot more things out there that are inaccessible?
Maybe it's because... it took so much for the Kindle 3 to have even the rudimentary accessibility that it has that it's like starting from scratch all over again. And there was such a fight to get even that going. And now people are just like, come on, Amazon, you didn't learn your lesson and start with even giving us that much or that little, depending on how you look at it, accessibility. And we have to start all over again. You know, it just feels like, you know, you're being ignored.
Yeah. Well, I mean, nobody ever cared about the Nook, the Barnes & Noble Nook. I mean, maybe it's just because Amazon has so many goods and services that you can get.
I think that's a large part of it.
Shipped.
I think that's a large part of it. And Amazon was, I mean, people order not just books from them, but all kinds of things, music. And I even was about to order some tea from them earlier. So they are so well known because they have so many goods and services. And they're primarily, when you think of Barnes & Noble and that, you think of going to the store bookstore. Amazon is an online bookstore that, you know, visually impaired people can take advantage of the best because you don't have to go anywhere. You can just browse their catalog. And although you can do it on Barnes & Noble, I don't think Barnes & Noble has nearly the online presence that Amazon does.
No, not anymore.
Especially
used to be when Amazon started, it was pretty competitive. But after they added all the other goods and services they provide, it kind of went downhill from there. But yeah, definitely need to fill out things in the forums. Maybe go to getsatisfaction.com where they actually have unofficial forums that you can actually post questions and things. A lot of companies do actually look at those unofficially. You know, there is an Amazon group on there. Maybe even try and talk to, I believe somebody had recommended maybe newspapers or things in the Sarah Talk
recommended that.
Yeah, or hey, contact your Congress critter and find out what they might think of it.
Yeah, the Sarah Talk blog post on the Kindle Fire's lack of accessibility was very good and thorough. I was impressed with that. So if you'd like to read not only about this situation, but also the entire Kindle family structure now, that blog post is a good one.
Yeah, and they also released I believe it's about 29-minute rant on the Kindle Fire accessibility, which was pretty good because it was four different people giving their points of view. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was kind of well thought out. It wasn't like, it sucks.
Yeah, it was very well thought out and thorough. So,
I'll try and include that in the post for this episode. If you are so interested... And I guess that's about all we really need to say about the Kindle Fire, other than it looks interesting. It's not really got any accessibility. There's no real word as to whether you can put a screen reader on it built for Android.
I mean, Android, they do have some solutions that are sort of okay screen reader wise, you know, like Spiel and TalkBack, but and certain apps, but there's no word on how open of a platform it is, you know, whether you can install apps on it or not.
Yeah. So. And too, I will say that Saratalk did point out one thing, was that a lot of the content that you can get by being an Amazon Prime member for $79 a year, you can't even access as a visually impaired person. So that's kind of making people a little bit bitter too, because they can't access the video content and such. So something else to consider when you are actually talking to your people and trying to complain and get ideas across. If you have ideas on what could be done to spread the word about the issue and sort of get it out there, let us know, because we're looking for ideas. I think the Kindle Fire Sale is an interesting thing. I think it's probably, with the mass hysteria over everybody buying that, it might just get lost in the shuffle.
Yeah, because so many people are ordering them. But I think it's a good idea myself. Moving right along.
Apple had their wonderful announcement yesterday on October 5th. 4th. Today's the 5th, right?
Yeah.
I announced that earlier.
You announced that earlier. Oh, okay. I was going to say.
Yeah.
And yes, it was coincide, greatly wonderful.
And to coincide with that wonderful announcement, AT&T also is planning, or has done so. It's kind of unclear as to whether it's a rumor or not a rumor, but they are looking at extending the cost of their insurance plans for phones.
Mm.
So for a monthly, per month cost, you would go from $4.99 to $6.99, and they would probably add a $50 to $199 deductible cost that you would be charged, depending on the kind of phone. So the iPhone 4 would probably be the $199 replacement value.
Might as well buy a whole new phone.
So that might be something to take into account. But the keynote occurred yesterday with wonderful Tim Cook taking over the reins from Steve Jobs, who was not mentioned or acknowledged whatsoever.
Yeah, I found that a little bit interesting. And
well, it's probably just a way of saying,
oh, I think it's a way of over, moving on.
We don't want to get people teary-eyed and wondering where he's at and everything.
Apple did not stream the event because it occurred on the campus. It did not occur in San Francisco. So we basically had to depend on live blogging and other such information to get to know what was going on during the event.
Yeah, it was kind of funny because you were the one here at home that during that. So you were monitoring everything and tweeting out little things.
Yeah. And
that was the first time you've done that.
Yeah. And it was basically really funny because I was listening to the Twit Live netcast and they were like, are they giving us a stream yet? Has anyone found a stream yet? No. Well, okay. We'll just continue to talk. And for the first 45 minutes, really nothing happened. And then there were a few little nuggets and bits dropped here and there. Actually, we can sum up the keynote in about 80 seconds.
Yeah. Gizmodo did a very humorous, recap in 80 seconds of the Apple keynote, and we will play that right now for you so that we don't have to talk that much.
My first product launch just 10 years ago, we launched the original iPod here. Over 300 million iPods around the world. The number one smartphone in the world.
Cards is an app which lets you create and mail beautiful cards, $2.99, notifications, iMessage, reminders, Twitter, newsstand, camera, Game Center, Safari, mail, PC free, next week.
iTunes Match, find my friends. All of this is part of iCloud.
All that's new inside the new iPhone 4S, a whole new chip, a great new antenna system with 8 megapixel camera with all new optics, 1080p HD video camera, AirPlay, iCloud, everything about iOS 5, and now Siri.
Voice dials, control your music, messages, manage your calendar, reminders, and maps, email, weather, docs, alarm clock, timers, contacts. You can create notes. You can search the web, Wikipedia, Wolfram Alpha.
I am a humble personal assistant.
The most amazing iPhone yet.
iPhone 3GS for free. An iPhone 4, it's just $99. And the brand new iPhone 4S at $199. It'll be available in a week.
Thank you very much.
So, what else is to say about that?
That's basically it. Oh, other than the iPod Nano now has 60 new watch faces.
Now,
even
Mickey
Mouse.
That is kind of cool.
Yeah, I think that's so neat. It's got like Ooh, I said neat. 16 different watch faces, which means they've really come to recognize that most people use this as a fitness device.
Yeah,
and
so
a watch.
So it's got a built-in pedometer. You can use it as a watch. It's got different faces. I believe the 16 gigabyte model is $199, which is like a $30 price decrease.
Mm.
So that's kind of cool. They actually acknowledge that people want to wear it as a watch.
Yeah.
So if you want to try and get into the Nike Plus thing where it actually connects with the pedometer, you don't have to have a dongle.
No, you don't need a sensor anymore.
Like that. So
yeah.
That's good.
Now, the iPod Classic, there was no word on whether they were getting rid of it officially or not.
Yeah, it is still currently in the store, so that is a good thing. This is the iPod Classic that has the little click wheel round everything. Doesn't have voiceover support.
No.
But it comes in 80 and 160 gig models. It's the little miniature hard drive version.
Oh, your poor iPod Classic.
Well, mine was actually the fifth generation video version. After about 5 years, it decided it did not want to work anymore.
I mean, really.
But it was used quite continuously.
Oh, yeah.
So I can't complain about that. But hopefully that'll stick around because there are still people that clamor for those devices that are easy to use.
Apparently, Apple has disabled the click wheel games, though.
Yeah, that's strange because they got rid of those games out of iTunes, so that kind of fueled the idea that Classic was going to disappear. No word on whether that will actually come back or not. A couple things they added were where you can find family and friends. You can actually have security settings for whether you can find friends and family as to where their GPS location is.
So. Yeah, it's sort of a making the Find My iPhone a bit bigger. I guess it's going to be an app that you're going to purchase and it's,
or download for free. Yet.
We're not sure yet. To find not only your iPhone, but also your friend's iPhone. So someone pointed out this could be great for parents who want to know where their kids are. They can track their kids' iPhones.
Yeah, and you can go, say, to an amusement park and say, okay, for the next 6 hours, we can all see where each other are in the actual
amusement park.
Of course, that's kind of good.
Won't help your kids if they get into any dangerous situations. I mean, there's no substitute for the human touch, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, it does give a little bit more freedom there.
And the bizarre thing of the greeting cards.
That's weird.
I guess they're trying to help out the U.S. Postal Service by actually creating mail that needs to go out.
I guess.
This is a service where you can actually take pictures, which is kind of cool. You can go to Hawaii or somewhere and you can take a nice picture and then you can send it out to people for $3, $3 charge, and it'll actually be sent by snail mail to them.
Just to clarify, folks, this is not $3 for the app and then everything else is free. This is $2.99 per postcard.
Yes. But it's something you could send for mementos and things. I've heard a couple people say that that would be something that they probably would do on a trip.
Yeah. And I think the biggest thing we need to clarify a couple things. One is iOS 5 will be available next week on the 12th.
Which is Wednesday.
Which is Wednesday. Orders for the iPhone 4S will start
on the
7th.
And will actually ship out on the 14th, of October.
And I was not clear on whether it was just to the U.S. or whether it was for all over the world.
I believe it will actually be available around the world on the 14th.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too.
Kind of monumental.
Speaking of all around the world, the iPhone 4S is going to use the chip from Qualcomm, which is both CDMA and GSM chip.
Yeah.
So it is actually an international phone.
Yeah, and it is the same speed as what you have in the iPad 2, which should make it very snappy. No word on whether the 1 gigabyte of RAM is actually what was in it or not.
Yeah.
That was rumored beforehand, so it may be a big increase as far as 3GS users whose contracts are up right now.
And also, the camera is 8 megapixel instead of 5 megapixel that you have with a regular iPhone 4.
And it supposedly has a little bit better sensors so that it will pick up a little bit more light, which could help as far as doing OCR with some of the various scanner apps that are out there.
And I will mention, although iOS 5 is going to be available next week, iCloud and iTunes Match will not be available until the end of the month.
I believe iCloud will be available the 12th, but the Music Match is actually going to be the end of the month or later.
Yeah.
I think that was clarified.
Maybe that was it. Yeah, because yesterday after, we weren't really sure.
It was a little, when?
Yeah, okay. But the main thing I think people are really curious about for the iPhone 4S is the Siri component of it. Your humble personal assistant, she says. And there are videos up on YouTube, and you can look to see how it works. Basically, you ask your phone to do things, and it will do them, or, answer questions and all this kind of thing. It's unclear. Well, it seems very clear, at least, that you're going to need the iPhone 4S to do most of this because it's very processor intensive. However, it's not clear whether there's going to be a kind of like dumbed down version in iOS 5. It's going to be really sad if there isn't, because the
Siri... You mean for older phones?
For older phones, yeah. Yes. It's going to be really sad if there isn't going to be one, because the Siri app, for those of you who might want the Siri personal assistant, it is no longer in the iTunes App Store, and the servers are down.
Yeah, so that's probably in accordance with putting it in iOS 5, which actually the Gold Master version of that was released to developers yesterday, after the keynote.
But if you absolutely cannot wait... You can download it.
Interesting.
I've seen links to download it.
Oh, you mean the darknet, as it were.
The underworld.
Aha. Uh-huh.
I'm not advocating this. I'm sure not going to do it.
Nah, I can wait.
I can wait a week. But apparently there are 200 new features.
Yeah, there's always 300 or 200 new features. And sometimes it's simply... We improved the picture quality of the icons.
Yes. So, and apparently now, I love this antenna thing, there is an intelligent antenna in the iPhone 4S. So if you're holding it wrong, it will switch antennas.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But they didn't screw up the old iPhone.
No,
it's
not them that screwed it up. It's you. No. You're holding it wrong.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love
it. Yeah, and the... Lack of LTE is something that people are really clamoring for and complaining about. And Apple said yesterday that because of the new antenna design, they're actually almost faster than LTE 4G certs.
If you say so.
So I have a feeling that CNET and the folks all around are going to be testing that out as soon as they get their handy little hands on it.
I believe you're right. And also one other thing that was sort of talked about is that the new iPhone will have a different shape. The shape is exactly the same as the iPhone 4.
Yeah.
So it will fit into all your cases that you have right now. And it looks no different. And to all those case manufacturers who went by the rumors and manufactured little teardrop-looking cases.
Yep.
Too bad.
Yeah, there was the question yesterday on Tech News Today whether or not that might have been a plant. Like, they gave that information out in
Maybe.
Some of the factories to sort of see if who was leaking information.
Mm-hmm.
Because you saw all these new iPhone designs out there, and then all of a sudden the design hasn't changed.
Yeah, you wonder. That's interesting. I had never thought about that.
But as far as accessibility, still has the voiceover screen reader. It has support for playback of closed captioned content. Has the assistive touch for adaptive accessories like your Braille displays and such.
Mm-hmm.
Full screen zoom magnification, large fonts, white on black display, and left right volume adjustment so that you can put more volume to one ear than the other.
Basically, the feature set for accessibility has not changed.
No. There may be some new bugs or new additions to that, but people are under NDA and shouldn't be talking about those things. But I guess it was sort of what everybody kind of anticipated. It's sort of an incremental update. It's not really a big game changer.
And just to reiterate, it is the iPhone 4S. No,
Speedy or Squirrel.
No yet... Information on what the S is supposed to stand for. Speedy, Squirrel.
Yeah, everybody had the same questions back when it was a 3GS. Yeah. What's the S for? Don't know. It's just sort of the in-between stepchild of the iPhone 4. And in that video, you did hear correctly that the 3GS will be offered for free And the 4 will actually come out for $100.
Yeah. So it's basically they're going to drop the price by $100.
Yeah. So I guess the recommendation would be if your contract is up, the 4S is probably the way to go, unless you're going to try doing something with an Android phone. If you do not want to spend that much, I would probably recommend the 4 because there's not really a whole heck of a lot of difference.
Not really, no.
The 3GS for free, stay away from that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's already 2 years old.
I mean, it already has trouble. Yeah, a lot of 3GS people are having trouble with iOS 4 on a 3GS phone. iOS 5 is, you know, think about it.
Yeah, and
may even have more trouble.
I think the biggest thing that's going to catch is all the Walmart shoppers.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought about that,
too. It's going to catch those folks as far as, I can get an iPhone for free with a contract? Ooh, goody, goody.
Exactly.
And then they'll be like, I don't see what's so great about this. So anyway, that's sort of our ramble fest on Apple. What happened with the Apple keynote. If you go to iTunes, you can actually download the Apple keynotes. Just search for that. And there is a podcast version out there for you so that you can listen to the little bit less than 2 hour extravaganza of Tim Cook, who doesn't seem to be as exciting as Steve Jobs.
Yes, exactly. And it really was not worth me missing lunch for. It was not worth that. It was like, it didn't end until like, it was after 2:45 when it finally ended.
Yeah, and for some strange reason, they didn't have a place where the reporters and such could actually touch it and use it afterwards, which was a little bit strange.
Interesting.
Yeah. But, and one thing that did come out was that AppleCare will actually have an AppleCare Plus version. For $99, you can insure your iPhone for 2 years. And that will actually cover 2 accidental damage issues. Mm-hmm. There will be a $49 surcharge fee for making any claims against that.
One last Apple thing, but it is not related to the keynote. They are seeking worldwide licensing for music in the iCloud. So they have already come to agreements with U.S. Music companies. But they are now trying to negotiate with companies all around the world to put their music into the iCloud.
Yeah, that's always the big thing because other countries say, well, we don't have as good of an experience, or they have different pricings and it's not as inexpensive, or maybe we're not getting the best deals either here just because of RIAA and such. So maybe that'll actually turn out to be something good.
Maybe so.
And now we can head into the wonderful world of accessibility.
Ivona, the text-to-speech or the, text-to-speech corporation, however you want to say that, developing software voice synthesizers that are pretty good, if a little quirky, is coming out with a SDK for iOS. So people are now going to be able to add Ivona voices to self-voicing apps or apps that need a voice to function. So that is kind of cool. Because they had that for Android and now they have opened it up to the iOS platform.
Definitely a good thing. Mm-hmm. Spreading the speech.
Absolutely. There is also a new app for iOS called Speech Trans. I'm not exactly sure how old it is. I think it's relatively new. It will, convert text that adheres into the written word or speech that adheres
reversed.
Into the written word. It does both.
Oh, it does both.
Yes. Ah. It converts speech that it hears into text, or if you write text into it, it will speak the text that you write into it. This app is currently, I think, only supports English, I think, and is also $50 in the App Store.
$49.99.
It's a bit expensive for an app. Apparently, there is someone who has used it. We have a link in our Delicious Notes for show 111 that talks about it, says it's got potential, but really, at this point, was not worth the $50 he spent. Yeah. There is another iOS app that will basically take away a big portion of my job if people start using it. It will be able to tell people whether or not they qualify for Social Security disability benefits from the U.S. government. That is part of what I do.
Oh.
Everyone,
please run to iTunes right now and find the Advocator and vote it down in the App Store.
Stop it. I'm actually probably going to download that just to see how it works. It is free.
It's just not as perky as you.
Well, I don't actually tell people whether they qualify or not. I get involved after they've applied and been denied.
Aha!
So this is, I guess, a first step. This actually might be more of a, a tap on the actual Social Security workers at social services than me personally, me as an attorney. But it's supposedly you answer a whole bunch of questions and it tells you whether you qualify for any benefits and how much. Obviously, that is not the end of the road. It does not qualify as actually submitting your application. It gives you an idea of what to expect once you submit it. But, you know, you still need to, submit it and go through the proper procedure.
Ah, so it doesn't take into account the irritating lady at the Social Security office that doesn't like the way you look.
I don't think so. Can't submit it over, over the iPhone.
It might be something that comes soon later.
Yeah, I'm really interested in downloading it and finding out. Finding out if it works or not and how well it works and the kinds of questions it asks. Getting out of the iOS arena on accessibility, AT&T has decided it is going to offer to its Android phone customers a light version of the mobile accessibility suite of products that Code Factory has produced. I'm not exactly sure what is light about it, but it does contain features like the screen reader, the calendar, the web browser, and the email.
And as well as the GPS app.
Yes. And apparently there are 17 little programs that it offers in that suite. I think what's light about it is there's no way to use the phone outside of that suite. There's no screen reader access built in otherwise. So you have to stay within the Code Factory products to use the phone.
Uh-huh.
If you don't have any other screen reading apps installed.
Maybe that's what it is. I don't know. That's
but we're not really sure because we don't really know, but that's what they're thinking.
And they've also not mentioned how long this promotion is going to go on. Is it going to be a long lasting thing?
Yeah.
So if you're going to AT&T to get a Android phone or anything like that, you may want to check into that or pass the word along that Code Factory's mobile accessibility is free.
And I'm not exactly sure how many phones it's offered on either.
Yes.
We're not really sure at this point, but, if you want Android phone, go to AT&T and find out.
Now, I'm going to insert a story here that she has no idea about. There is a company called Funnelback.com.
Oh, yeah.
FUNNELBACK.com. They have a website accessibility audit service that companies and organizations can get to check out websites that they're actually creating as to whether they are compliant. So if you know anybody that is trying to make decisions on website design, they might want to check out the WCAG compliance auditor over at funnelback.com.
That was actually going to be a TA daily tip.
Yeah, but you can't do anything other than see a demo.
Well, still.
Oh, my bad.
Dolly Parton
Where's
and
Dolly?
The American Printing House for the Blind are entering into a collaboration. Dollywood has the Imagination Library that has books in it and stuff for kids. And there's a collaboration going on with APH to produce some of these books in audio and braille formats. So these are children's books that the Imagination Library has, and they're already starting to roll out the audio books. Apparently, they will start providing the braille books in 2012 to, obviously, families who qualify for it.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So I thought that was a cool little thing to insert. Cool little uplifting story.
And it involves Dolly Parton, who
Absolutely.
Gets into the room before she actually does.
Now, that's not very nice, dear.
Everybody was thinking it. The Braille 21 Awards were completed last week.
Well, yeah. It takes place in Germany every year. The Braille Conference, the Braille 21 Summit, I believe they call it. And the Portable Embosser Format, PEF, got an award for, being as versatile and wonderful as it is. It's essentially like XML for Braille documents.
Yeah, it builds XML, Unicode, and whatever Dublin Core is.
But it basically, it's like, it gives the file some extra information and helps maintain the integrity of the Braille standard across formats. I don't exactly know how it works and what all the information it has in it, but apparently people are really excited about it.
Huh.
Yeah. It was a little bit confusing for me. I just thought of it as if you've got a Braille document, it's got this extra file that has this information. I don't know. I don't really understand.
Maybe it builds the XML so that you can actually send it to the embosser. And you can probably use it for other things, like loading it into various documents, like Word, maybe.
I think you can do that with the embosser, but I'm not sure if you can do that if you load it into another program. I'm not sure if it'll read, you know, if the other program will be able to read the information in there.
Because it's kind of like, what is it, Adobe Reader that creates the PDFs. You can create editable PDF files, and it will actually export, or it used to. I haven't used it since version 7, but it would actually export a XML version that you could then send to someone as just a small text file, and then they could load it into whatever PDF reader they wanted to, and it would populate.
Right. That's possible. Possible.
And now, just when you think everything is great and hunky-dory with the government and banking and such, your debit card is actually going to start costing you a little bit more thanks to Bank of America.
Yes, if you are with Bank of America and have a debit card, you will be charged $5 per month for every month that you make purchases on it.
Oh, they are paying some hell for this one.
Oh, my goodness. Whatever happened to the days when banks loaned out money and paid you for it?
Yeah. Now, Wells Fargo started this or mentioned that they were going to start doing this soon. A couple months ago, they announced that they were going to start charging $3, but $5 just for using your debit card.
Every month. It's not just like a one-time fee here. This is every month you make a purchase or use your debit card.
Yeah, it's kind of
$5.
It's kind of interesting because I'm in the banking world now. I kind of find things out about this kind of stuff. And it's interesting because earlier, like 10 years ago, they were pushing everybody to go to using their debit cards.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they don't want you to use the debit cards because there's been like different legislation and government action here in the U.S. that makes it more expensive if you use your credit card because of fees and things that are assessed by the various networks like Visa and MasterCard and things.
Right.
So it's expensive for the actual bank to have you use your credit card. Plus, if you use your credit card, you're going to probably pay the minimum payment or pay something on it, and you're not going to pay off. So they'll get to make money based on the actual surcharge fee or, you know, that 20% that rides your back like a crazed monkey every month. But the difference is that credit cards have an expensive fee. It's like $3 a transaction in some cases. You have like a debit card that you will have like a PIN transaction where you actually have to hit your PIN and then there's a PINless one. Yeah, you're getting bored, I can tell. Just like me at work. I work in banking and I greatly hate it.
Well,
it's just not interesting. The terminology and everything, I mean, I consider it just numbers with what I do. But it's a lot cheaper for merchants that you go to, because if you use your debit card, their fee is not as much as if you use your credit card. So banks, I think I said that right. I get that backwards as well as other people in banking that have been doing this stuff for 20 years. It's credit cards for the merchant are more expensive than if you use your debit card. So you might have 20 cents for a charge on a debit card. Yeah, that's the way it is. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
See, I sort of know what I'm talking about. But yeah, I do not like banking terminology. They have these little town hall meetings and things where they go over the great numbers of things. And it's just like, oh, God, 2 hours you can't get back.
Oh, gosh. Oh, that's never good.
And I guess Kickstarter is being hit with a lawsuit because, well, everybody's patent crazy in the world, and somebody is claiming that they did it first.
Yeah, it's basically a website for music artists and things, and I really don't remember much about this story, so maybe we should just skip it.
Hey, we can do that too and just say that, hey, Kickstarter's being sued just like everybody else that does cell phones and
exactly.
things as far as patents, and maybe somebody will buy them and such. And
yeah,
so
Kickstarter absolutely is cool. It has recently reached its 10,000th project, fully funded project.
Uh-huh.
Just so everyone knows that. Yeah. I remember that about the story, not much else.
Yeah, it's a site where people can gain funding by asking the community to donate for things that they want to build or movies they want to film.
The Haptica Braille Watch was on there at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, I don't know if that ever reached its goal or not. I never checked.
I'm not sure either.
I think it did, but
The 6-dot Braille Labeler was also on Kickstarter a couple months ago, and I think they actually did reach their goal of 50,000.
Yes, I think so.
So, we'll leave it at that.
Yeah, let's do that. Google is jumping into the beer making.
They are making a beer in combination with, what is this brewery called again?
Dogfish Head Brewery.
They are making a beer called You Are Continent.
U R K O N T I N E N T. Apparently, it represents the gigantic continent that the Earth used to be before, I guess, the Big Bang or whatever ended dinosaurs or something.
Why not call it Pangaea? Because that's what the continent was named.
Maybe that sounds like a tooth fungus.
P-A-N-G-A-E-A.
I don't know. Maybe they weren't smart enough or maybe they wanted something that was just like, our continent is,
Well, as the guy who wrote the blog post said, if you take it apart, it's you are continent, which is the opposite of what you would be if you drank too many of those beers.
That is very true.
I love that guy's writing. He is so funny. Anyway, they are incorporating ingredients from all over the world, even Africa and Australia, and even honey from the Google Hive Complex.
Oh, jeez.
They have a beehive complex.
Oh, jeez.
And they're using their honey in the beer. Isn't that sweet?
Yeah, this is one of those 20% a week projects that somebody at Google came up with. They are not figuring that they are going to make any money on this, but it is kind of humorous.
And I'm not sure when the beer will actually be distributed or, you know, what the distribution network for this will be. But I do know that the first taste test of the beer was done via Google Plus. Via a Google Plus Hangout.
Oh, jeez.
I know. This is advertising, people.
I will actually include the link to the dogfish.com page on the You Are Continent.
Oh, boy.
What in the world are they thinking?
I do not know. What were you thinking? The economy is tough. Times are hard. And I totally understand that. And I guess, to emphasize how hard times are, we should take a look at the 5 strangest things that people are stealing lately. Within the past year.
This is bizarre.
Thefts of these items have gone up hugely. The first item.
What? No, no.
Oh, wait.
Let's start with number 5.
Oh, okay.
The number 5 most stolen item is hair.
Human hair.
Hair. Is there a run on fixing Barbie dolls that have had their hair yanked out? I don't get it.
The way people do this is they go into beauty salons and pick up a whole bunch of hair. And they take it to places that make wigs and hair extensions and all that other fun stuff and sell it. And people have gotten as much as $90,000 for a hair heist.
Egad.
I know. Isn't that the craziest thing?
Item number 4. Coupons.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, see, you just found out. Rednecks say coupons and you
said coupons. And
tomato,
for your information, my mother says coupons. So it's not just a redneck thing.
Oh, okay.
I'm a weird person. I say coupons because
that maybe is our
in
first
French,
thing in
it's
common.
Coupon. Anyway, yeah, people are going into other people's mailboxes, finding the coupon newspapery thing.
The flyer.
Yeah, the flyer, and stealing it to clip coupons.
You can't use them, but at so many at a time.
I don't understand. I guess they're looking for them that don't expire and that don't go bad.
I don't know. Maybe it's for the double or triple coupon places.
I don't know.
I don't know. Item number 3 is brass.
Not grass. Brass with a B.
And it's not the brass monkey either.
No. This is brass like The fire hydrant rings in cities, and this is actually posing a danger to the public because people will steal them, and firemen need them to hook their hoses up to the fire hydrants. But you can get about $15 for each ring. And yet another sad thing, people are starting to steal brass vases from grave sites.
Oh, that's always been a problem.
Isn't that terrible, though?
Yeah.
I think it's sad.
Well, yeah, that's always been a problem.
Yeah, but the fire hydrant rings, that was pretty extreme.
Now, around here, you it's strange to go into a cemetery and actually see like a plastic vase for people, and they have like the plastic flowers. But sometimes you'll run across those brass vases that has the plastic flowers.
Mm-hmm.
Scary.
That
Not
is
the
scary.
Silk flowers, but the plastic ones.
Ooh.
Yeah, tacky.
Mm.
Item number two is hogs.
No, item number two is dogs.
Dogs?
Dogs.
Huh, sounds the same.
Yeah, item number two is dogs.
Huh, spelled the same.
Sorry. American Kennel Club has stated that dog theft is up 49% from last year. And the smaller dogs get stolen or dog napped or whatever you want to call it much more than the larger dogs because smaller dog breeds are more expensive.
Huh, to figure.
Yeah. So, yet another fast, cheap way for somebody to try to make money off these poor dogs.
And number one is hogs or pigs.
Yes, hogs. And I guess with the price of pork skyrocketing, people feel like they should steal, well, pork.
Mm.
And they steal about 150 hogs at a time. Mm. Takes about 45 minutes and actually probably, according to farmers, takes a team of professional hog stealers. I don't know about the professional, but it takes a whole big team of people to shepherd all these pigs out of the barn and, you know, all that kind of thing. So,
Me likes the pork.
I like pork too, but I don't know if I'd go and steal it. Mm-hmm. If I absolutely could not afford it, I think I would learn to live without.
Maybe. I don't know. Some real
Can
nice
you imagine
bacon.
having that on your criminal record?
Yeah.
Larceny. What'd you steal? Pig. Well, maybe 40 pigs.
Well, you never know. Person that asked that question might have said, well, did you get some good bacon out of that? If you didn't, then you were totally wrong. You should have went to jail.
Maybe.
I don't know.
I think that's it.
Egad.
This total crap fest that you
That
have
is completely new because we added a theme. And
yes.
We figured that seeing as how other podcasts have swooshes and dings and dongs, we needed a ding as well. Exactly.
Yes.
So that I can answer it also.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, we tried out Julie a little bit, you know, but we need a little ding there to sort of help the flow go along. I don't know. That
Sweet!
Oh, jeez. Yes. She's still there. But, yeah, we're just playing around with it. But, yeah, the theme will stay. The ding, I'm not sure about. We'll see.
We'll see.
We'll probably get complaints because of that.
We may get complaints. I may have done too much of the...
Yeah.
We'll just have to see.
So, this mess that you have been listening to for God knows how long is Tech Access Weekly episode
111.
If you would like to check out the show notes as usual or articles considered for this episode that we did not ramble through for your convenience, you can head over to delicious.com/techaccess/111. If you would like to check out the Melting Pot Show on Mushroom FM, please do so on Sunday evenings from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern. You can get all the details at mushroomfm.com/meltingpot.
And if you would like to send us comments or questions, email techaccessweekly@gmail.com.
Follow us on Twitter at @TA_weekly, and you can get the call in to hear your voice on this wonderful podcast and make it more of a disaster by calling
260-227-5829.
For the numerically challenged.
Yes. 260-2-ASK-TAW.
Yes.
Yes.
And we repeated that just because
we could.
We're still out of practice because we're trying to insert it at the beginning.
Yeah.
Because I have actually had people say, how can I get a comment in before?
Yeah.
Because they never finished the podcast. Tisky, tisky. But anyway, we will simply sign off and say, please send your comments and everything, complaints, whatever. And
people will be complaining after this ramble fest.
Whew! It's probably at least an hour and a half, 2 hours
and
going
we will
here.
Say.
Bye-bye.